we turn to the book of Titus. A church planter, a colleague of the Apostle Paul. Paul left him on the island of Crete, which is owned by Greece, the fifth largest island in the Mediterranean basin. The Lord prophesied that the islands of the sea would receive His word, and indeed, we see Him fulfilling His promise. But it isn't going to be easy. It's like taking the horses in the wild, wild west and trying to tame them and domesticate them. Well, the gospel domesticates the sinner, tames us, and saves us. But it isn't going to be easy because even Cretans themselves said that they're known for being liars, evil beasts, and slow bellies. And yet the Lord can save liars and ferocious, scary kind of people and lazy bellies. Indeed, He's been doing work through Titus and so confident that there can be more than one church that's planted. You notice in verse number 5 that elders were to be ordained in every city, so the confidence was not necessarily that there were many cities at that time with planted churches, but the projection of the gospel reaching the whole island and several churches being planted and established. There are churches of all sizes and in all different size cities throughout the world today. Just like in the early days. Well, last week we kind of went out of the chronological order and considering the profile of a godly woman, Christian womanhood. Well, we turn to the men today. Christian manhood, or a profile of a man of God or a godly man. Beginning with chapter 2, verse 1, "But speak thou the things which become sound doctrine, that the aged men be sober, grave, temperate, sound in faith, in charity, in patience." Down to verse 6, "Young men likewise exhort to be sober-minded, in all things showing thyself a pattern, a type of good works, in doctrine showing uncorruptness, gravity, sincerity, sound speech that cannot be condemned, that he that is of the contrary part may be ashamed, having no evil thing to say of you or about you." May the Lord bless the reading of His holy word to our hearts once again. Over the years, from time to time, especially around Father's Day, you'll see lists of a woman's wishes for a man. And the list, among many things, includes that he would be a listener, a provider, not a drunkard, not a screamer, facilitating a children's respect for their mother, making sure that their children remember their mother's birthday and Mother's Day. Not lazy, kind to their mother-in-law, if indeed they're married. A rare thing today, isn't it? Be able to play with their children on the floor. A spiritual leader, as these lists are brought into the church. Faithful or friendly. And you know, some of these qualities we've already seen, for instance, in the qualification list of the elders in chapter 1, blameless, not scandalous, faithful, a manager of the house, hospitable or friendly, not given to wine, not mean or being a quarreler. Certainly, a woman's wishes, but a biblical mandate. And we also saw having believing children, not greedy, a lover of good, discreet, just, and holy, and so on from 1 Timothy chapter 3. Well, the attention is drawn to the different categories, groups in the church. So it starts with the spiritual leaders, the government of the church, the governing leaders, the elders, and the deacons are mentioned back in 1 Timothy. Now the apostle divides into older men, older women, younger women, and then younger men. But we're going to just place these qualifications in the two groups of men and women. We considered the qualifications or the profile, the resume, if you will, of a godly woman last week. And what should be the resume of a godly man for our daughters or granddaughters that will one day be married, or men in the church? What are we praying for? What standard before God are we seeking? What kind of character are older men going to mentor to our younger men? What kind of believers ought we to be in the Church of Jesus Christ as well as in our homes? Well, he first addresses the aged men. The word aged is the word presbytos, similar to presbyteros, the elder, but the word presbytos simply means older, aged, one who is experienced. Again, what is older versus younger? We would perhaps say 50 and older, just like we talked about older women being about that age. Well, at least in the Bible, it says, take not a widow into the number that's younger than 60 years old. But aged men, whether to be considered as deacons or elders, as husbands and parents and grandparents, as covenant members, as citizens, as employees, as the neighbors, all these characteristics apply in all of these different spheres of life. And we find four in particular for the aged men and one simply for the younger men. Not again that they're exhaustive in nature, but they're suggestive in nature, and the other characteristics fall into place if these particular characteristics are found in these men. And I think overall we would use the term perhaps mature or respectable, if you look at these lists. A man of God ought to be respectable, to command respect, and therefore to be mature. And I think that at least is a conclusion as we consider these different characteristics. Well, you have in the Authorized Version sober, grave, and temperate, and then sound in faith, in love, and in patience. And then the younger men are exhorted to be sober-minded. And that's the same word translated temperate earlier for the older men. And so you have a repeat of the younger men. So as you look at these and just kind of scope and ponder the overall idea here, again, respectability, maturity, careful Christian living, we might say. Is that something that is paramount to each man of God? That we want to adorn the gospel of the Lord Jesus Christ. We want to carry ourselves in a way that is respectable, honorable to the Lord, and simply an example in the home and in the church and in society. The first word is the word sober for the older man. And the word has the idea of the control of desires. Cautious in the use of potential addictive substances. It does have that idea of temperance. A sense of proportion in those things that are not necessarily potentially addictive, but those things that are good in and of themselves. A sense of proportion in the use of time, for instance. A man who's described as sober is not a man that's going to spend hours and hours on playing video games in the misuse of his time. We're finding that men in their 30s and 40s are spending an overwhelming amount of time before video games and television programs and so on. There still is the average, the estimated average of a person who spends an average of 7 hours a day watching television. I can't think that that's possible in the Church of Jesus Christ, but maybe it is. And just, I'm not asking anyone to show, raise your hand or to acknowledge it visibly, but do any of us spend 5+ hours watching television or hours dominated through the week playing video games? But that is certainly something that is characteristic of this age. The lack of the facilitation of interaction and conversation. A man of God ought to be able to converse with people in a logical, affectionate, and interesting way. So a sense of proportion, the use of time, not squandering hours. Those things that are temporary. A neglect of children, for instance, a man of God is not going to neglect his children's soccer games for 3 nights of bowling. I mean, just giving an example of someone who is sober. Or someone who's going to have a sense of proportion regarding finances. And a man of God is not going to max out his credit cards. He's going to be very careful to live within his means. So this is the idea of one who's sober-minded, able to control his desires and able to control those things that he has at hand. And again, this is countercultural today. Credit card companies are preying upon people who max out credit cards and people are preying upon people to spend on things that they don't need or can't afford. And commercials are geared toward our eye gates to tell us what we should buy, what we need, what we must have. You've got to have this kind of a car or this kind of shoes, or you've got to have this kind of a lifestyle. If you're going to be cool, if you're going to be noticed, if you're going to be someone who has popularity. But godly people live within our means and are very careful and have a sense of proportion. And again, that should characterize older men. It's a challenge, certainly, to younger men, but you understand that younger men are more easily tempted toward disproportionate lifestyles, and we need to be so very careful. Well, you've heard of, I know this is the feminine side, but let's just look at the masculine side. You've heard of men who've had 100 pair of sneakers. I think that's a little bit over the top, but that's maybe an extreme example of a disproportionate way of living. I'm not saying that you can't have a few pairs of shoes, but don't you think it gets a little bit over the top? So may the Lord help us as older men, and a challenge to our younger men to be sober, to have a control of our desires and to carefully live within our means and to show the world that we are not greedy or that we're not idolatrous toward temporal things. It commands respect when they see someone able to live within our means. Believe me, what a blessing it is to pay off debts and as far as we can to be debt-free. Not everyone can be, but we were so happy to be able to pay off Tanya's vehicle last year. And it's just a good thing to try as much as we can to live within our means and to be very careful that we're not debtors. A debtor is a borrower, is a servant to the lender. Let us remember that. The second characteristic is translated grave. It's used in 1 Timothy 3, with all gravity or reverence, we're to have our children in subjection. And I think the gravity and reverence is referring to the father in this case. Have our children in all subjection with all gravity. I think it refers back to the fact that it's not that the parent has his children in subjection with a hammer or with a threat, physical threat, or with screams and hollerings, but that the children are in subjection because their father has commanded respect, has brought them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord, and they're respectable. When their father's name is mentioned, they think of him with respect and not with disdain. That it's not that the father is obeying the children, but that the children are obeying their father. This is the word sensible. It's behaving in a way worthy of respect. Again, these are synonymous, these terms. But seriousness, again, it's used of the woman, but not that the father cannot have a sense of humor. I think it's good to have a sense of humor, to be able to laugh at a clean joke or just to be able to laugh at yourself when you do something that's characteristic of an older person. And that's happening a lot lately. Like when I preached last week or the week before and I said that the soldiers were pivoted upon the cross. And we're thankful for a correction from the audience that it's riveted. And I'm going to have many more of these to come, just like years ago when all those killer waves came in and slew and killed all those people in the Far East. I call them killer whales. You know, those things are going to happen. But we ought to have a seriousness about us. We ought to be able to get serious when we, you know, in serious times. But a person ought not to be the joker. The town clown should not be a Christian, as it were. Yes, we need to have a sense of humor, but people need to know that we're serious. Heaven, there's a heaven to gain and a hell to shun. And sin is serious, and there's a judgment day coming, and we live with eternity in view. So believers should foster respect. First of all, you know, this is usually the case, and you find in seminaries that if you're going to have respect or affection, make sure the respect is first. But I would say that there ought to be affection with the students as well. But you've often heard that make sure that the professors, the teachers, the elders, the pastors, the ministers ought to have respect, but we ought to all also have affection. So we ought not to be goofballs and comedians. Life is serious. The Cretans were liars and brutal in their behavior and lazy. And what should characterize an older man, and I include younger men as well as we grow up, that we ought to be truthful and gentle and diligent. We ought to be serious in our way of living and in the way that we carry ourselves versus the world that that wants to make everything a joke. We ought to be very careful that we don't joke about serious matters, which is often the case. As you would look upon the internet or see all of these late night shows, I don't watch them, but you see cartoons and you see the buffoonery of these late night hosts toward those things that are serious and ought not to be made a joke. Hell ought never to be the context of a joke. I'll see my friends there, or hell frozen over. Hell isn't going to be frozen over, friend. The severity of God's wrath will be felt forever and ever. Thirdly, and again, it's not meddling with the characteristic. This is sound doctrine that's being exhorted. Sound doctrine leads to sound duty. You see, our behavior, our characteristics, our attributes reflect what we believe in, who we believe in. And so you have, thirdly, the word that's translated temperate. It's the word discreet, and it's also in 1 Timothy 3 and in Titus 1 about the elder. The word discreet, it means that the man of God has a measured restraint in all things. It suggests more prudence and wisdom, forethought, instead of someone who's impulsive, whether he's impulsive, an impulsive buyer or an impulsive with his words. Very careful, a soft answer, turns away wrath. We're thoughtful before we speak. Someone who's reverent. It's used of the young woman in verse 5. Proper. One who has good judgment, who has discernment in important matters. And so you see again that overall respectability and maturity are admonished, are encouraged in older men. Why? Because the world is opposite. It's countercultural. We're to reflect the holiness of our God and the respectability and the reverence, the holiness and the wisdom and the good judgment of our God. That He has saved us to be like Himself. And it's a reflection on our God, our behavior, that is, and our actions, our words. We want to let our light so shine before men and women that they might see our good works and hear our good words and glorify our Father which is in heaven. We don't want to cause the gospel to be maligned because of the ungodliness of our lives. You're a Christian and you speak like that? He's a Christian and I can never get him to be serious about matters? No, we ought to reflect the truthfulness and the holiness and the wisdom of our God. We're told, fourthly, that a man of God is to be sound, and sound in three things. But that word sound is found three times in the chapter. So ponder that. We're to be sound spiritually. Now, our bodies are dying. We cannot always say that our bodies are sound. They can be sickly and so on, but our soul should be sound at all times, whether in sickness or in health. The word sound is the idea of healthy. We ought to be healthy spiritually. It's the illustration of a tree. You know, you look at a tree, and if it's not bearing fruit, it's unhealthy if it's a fruit tree. If it's not growing leaves, it's unhealthy. We're having to drop most of the ash on the man's property. The bark is falling apart and the leaves are not forming properly. Some have no leaves. They're dead. They're unhealthy, obviously. But a believer ought to have fruit, the fruit of the Spirit. We ought to be sound. And it gives us three fruits, if you will. Again, it's not exhaustive. We can know Galatians tells us that when we're sound, we'll have love and joy and peace, long-suffering, gentleness, goodness, faithfulness, meekness, or the idea is meekness, but under self-control, but I'm looking. Love, joy, and peace, long-suffering, kindness is actually the word there. Kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness is meekness and self-control. That's what I was trying to get at. But and it gives us three here. And you recognize this enumeration from other passages. Faith, love, and patience. What does that remind you of? And now abideth these three. Faith, hope, and love. And the greatest of these is love. Right. But instead of hope, you have patience, which is a very similar idea here. And so, as it were, Paul is, he's got the letter to the Corinthians in mind as he writes the letter to Titus. And he's got all of these truths that have saturated his soul as he's written other letters. But older men are to be healthy in the exercise of these graces. Now, the faith, can I have the idea of healthy in his doctrine, which is true. But that's been touched upon earlier. Matter of fact, verse 1 says, and it's the very first word, thou, Titus. But speak thou, it's third in the English, but it's first in order in the Greek. So if you would look at the Greek chapter 2, verse 1, thou but speak the things which become sound doctrine. So the doctrine, we're definitely be healthy in the deity of Christ, salvation by grace, heaven and hell, and the major doctrines that are not negotiable. We're to be healthy in the truth. Older men, especially, should not be lacking in any of the doctrines. Someone should be able to ask us, what's the way to heaven? And we should be able to answer that. Is Jesus, is he God? Is he divine? And we should be able to take them to the scriptures and explain that to people. We should be sound in doctrine. But I believe that if you parallel faith with love and patience are activities here. They're actions. So we're talking about something subjective and not objective. So, yes, we're to be sound in doctrine, but we're to be sound in belief of that doctrine. And there is a difference. You can have a head knowledge of something and not really cling to that truth. And not have an active and fresh faith. And that's a challenge to all of us. Are we believing believers, as Dr. McClellan used to pray? You may say, I know the doctrine of the deity of Christ, but do you believe it in your heart? That He is the Son of God. That He is equal with the Father and the Spirit. You can say, I do believe that heaven is real. But is your heart exercised toward heaven? If you and I were given a death sentence, would our hearts have already been exercised in that anticipation? Or would we be shocked with that news? I mean, in a sense, it's going to shock us if we have the news and people are getting the news today. You have cancer. And you have pretty bad cancer. There are probably thousands of people in the world that are given that information today. And I might be next. But am I exercising my belief in these doctrines that cause me to be freshly acquainted with them and experienced enough that when these doctrines are faced when they're challenged by death, when they're challenged by heresies, when they're challenged by liars and lazy beasts or lazy bellies and ferocious people, that I'm already in stride having believed these truths, and I'm not knocked off my senses and shocked into being paralyzed at news. Remember, we just read Psalm 112. What does it say? He is not afraid of evil tidings. His heart is fixed. Why? Trusting in the Lord. He's sound in his believing. He's sound in his believing. We need to be sound by having present faith. Sound in love. Now that is certainly a challenge. As much as this section teaches older men to be respectable, yet it's teaching to be affectionate. And even though respectability in a professor, for instance, is the priority, affection should be very closely tied and aligned with respectability. There can be someone that's so starchy and respectful to that point where they're respectful to a fault, and a student can't approach that person and expect love, but whenever a question is asked, that there is embarrassment also sometimes with the answer, as if you're put on the spot and you're humiliated. Have you ever been in a class and ever had a professor that was respectable, but whenever you offered a question, they would humiliate you as if you should know the answer? I can think of certain professors that I was cringing whenever I would want to ask a question because I was afraid I was going to be humiliated again. We ought to be healthy. We ought to be sound and loving the Lord and loving one another and loving our enemies. Love in its reality, its growth. Love in its discrimination. Paul told Timothy to treat the older men as fathers, to love the younger men as brothers, to love the older women as mothers, and to love the younger women as sisters. But he noted with all gravity, be careful that your affection, your Christian love, does not spill over into that which is inappropriate and embarrassing and awkward to the young women. Love is discriminate. May God help us to have soundness in this lust-crazed world. That we should be able to have no question. And you know, that's something you notice especially, for instance, as a bus driver. The old days, you could do a high five and you could give the kids a hug when they came on the bus. And you just, you know, as much as you want to. And you know, we got 30 kids, 35 kids on a bus, and you're sitting there and you know, these little kids, they want to say something to you when they get on the bus. They want to hug you. They want to, you know, they'll tap me on the shoulder. How far can you allow something like that? But you have to be careful. And I feel like I'm being unaffectionate and mean, but I've got to be careful because of what is happening in the world. But nonetheless, my heart still, I pray to be affectionate toward these kids, to love them as human beings made in the image of God and to be concerned for their souls. And that's the way we ought to be with all of us. Careful, but not cold. Affectionate. Sound in love. And then sound in patience. The idea of hope. But patience is, the word speaks of bearing under loads. Again, a loving and believing way. And I confess my sin so often when I'm surprised by a burden, by news, unexpected news, that sometimes I want to cast off that burden rather than to bear under it. That I complain, that I quarrel instead of pray for God to give me patience. And you know, if we're asking for patience, we're asking for wait. Because the word patience means bearing under the weight. And the only way you and I can have patience is if we have weights. The only way we can tone our muscles is to lift weights. So we need to be sound in patience, which means we're going to have trials. We're going to have tribulations. You know, this is a word that particularly applied to new Christians in Crete. They had to struggle to live under the Cretan way of life. Now they had to face liars and ferocious people and lazy people with grace. They had to be patient with them. Patient with their employers. You ever had lazy employers or lazy colleagues that you're bearing all the weight? Struggle to live among the Cretans. A determination to live holy lives in an unholy world. To be truthful, even to a fault if it were, versus being ever accused of being a liar. Being gentle among rough, gruff people. Being diligent. And often you'll be the focus of scorn with most of the employees are lazy and not wanting to carry their load. What happens when you're carrying their load sometimes, and it's embarrassing to them, and you're going to be the mark of their scorn. But we're going to give account to the Lord one day, whether we redeemed the time and worked. The Bible talks about the work of faith and the toil of love in 1 Thessalonians. So older men are to be committed to the gospel by persevering service in the kingdom of God, showing forth faith, fresh faith, fresh love, and fresh patience. And then the young men are told simply, like the older men, to be serious-minded. Chapter 2 and verse 6, sober-minded. I think the idea again here speaks about being serious-minded, careful in their living, and that's hard for a young person who's wanting to live and let live, to get a saddle on them. You know, it's like a young horse. I don't know if any of you have ever had to put a saddle on a horse that was young and wasn't domesticated. But the Lord wants to put a saddle on us early. Remember when they took the Lord and put Him upon that beast, the young beast? They were all thinking that young beast is going to cast Him off the back. And as soon as the Lord sat upon that beast, it was the beast that was domesticated. It was the beast that was affected. And the Lord wants to settle us early. To be a good testimony in this world, to show the world that young people, not all young people, are wild and ruthless and insubordinate. They're used to young people getting arrested. They're used to young people being in jail. But people need to see that there are young people in our families and young people in our churches that are respectable and careful and humble and respectful of authority. Yes, sir, no, sir. And respectful of the police and respectful of employers, neighbors, older people. And isn't it interesting, the older men here are mentioned first because they're the mentors of older or of younger men. And so often the older men are cast off in churches. I remember a minister said his favorite service was the evening service because he said the older men were there. It wasn't just the crowd. He said we had more time for our young children and as he was talking about as they were growing up. They had more time because there were less people to spend with the older men and women. And he said, I cherished that because I knew that my children were getting affected by more time spent with older people. That was a positive thing for them. And yet we find that so often we get cliquish. The young just are with the young and the old with the old. We ought not to be like that. We ought to be intermingling with all of us together. And let's remember as older men and women, we're an example to the young. Let's set that example and point them heavenward and point them to be more like the Savior. And notice he includes Titus, apparently as a young man, because you notice he's right after the section with the young men, in all things showing thyself. See that? Titus is right there with the young men. You too, Titus, even though you may not be old, and we're assuming Titus might be in his 20s, right? You're to be a type, Titus. You're to be like this young, the young men in being sober-minded. But make sure in doctrine, and I think here he's talking about his words, his teaching, that it's uncorrupt, that you're not corrupted by the heresies and the false teachings of the world. You're grave, that is, you're serious. You're not bringing gospel messages with a jovial and in a foolish and a lighthearted way. You know, there are, I don't know if you've ever, there are churches you can depend on 10 jokes in the sermon. You can depend on constant joking, and it's just a way to keep the crowd. You gotta be joking all the time instead of the truth commanding the heart. It's the atmosphere. It's kind of like, again, the use of music is positive. It can be very positive, but so often manipulation of the circumstances of the atmosphere is by the repetition of music, as we find so often in these high concentrated altar calls, where the music has set the tone rather than the truth setting the tone. And be careful that you're sincere, Titus. Be careful that the word there is again, without hypocrisy. In good work, showing purity, reverence, incorruption. Sound speech that's irreprehensible, it cannot be called into question. Not that people aren't going to castigate and ridicule what you say, but the things that they know are true or false, or black or white, that no one can ever say that you're in the black, that you're a false person, that you're a liar. They may not like what we believe and like what we teach, and they're not going to until the Lord opens their hearts. But they can't call into question our integrity, our honesty, our concern, our love for their souls. You're to be that type, Titus. You know, I understand. I think there is a challenge for all of us. Let's just give an example. When you walk into the room, do people stop swearing? When you walk into the room, do people stop their dirty behavior? And I know that's not the end of it, because you and I can be moral and affect people as salt and light, and yet not spiritual in the sense of pointing them to the Lord. And that's the challenge beyond. The tongue of the wise useth knowledge aright, but fools pour out foolishness. Well, what's the take-home message? The Lord has the right to command what we believe, and He also has the right to command how we behave. You see, what we believe is what the Lord uses to change how we behave. If any man be in Christ, he's a new creature. Old things have passed away, all things have become new. The Lord wants us to let our light shine before men, that they might see our good works and glorify our Father which is in heaven. He has sway over us, young and old. And as older ones, we have room to grow, don't we? We need to pray through these qualities. But let's particularly remember the younger generations, that God would strengthen your heart and God will keep you from being affected negatively by the peer pressure of this world. Lord willing, you have many years ahead of you. Begin well, continue well, and end well. Thank the Lord for His Word. It's not doctrine on paper only. It's life-giving Word. It's life-changing truth.